kidney I do not speak very well.
Yes.
My name is Fry, Elizabeth Fry.
Oh, yes, yes.
A long time ago, I came and spoke to you that I knew that you were so interested in the higher aspects of this tremendous group. And I am so anxious to be of some help and some service. And I know that you two are most sincere and that you are endeavoring to contact people to educate them, to make them understand the realities of this great and glorious existence that awaits all God's children. I know that you're doing your utmost, and I'm sure there are times when you find it very difficult. But you must expect it. All those who would be reformers, all those who would change, men's way of thinking must be prepared for many rebuffs. And I'm quite sure you've had a few of those. What a tremendous number of souls do come to you that are attracted because of your motive. It is, of course, not an easy task. I know. One might say it's a pity that you couldn't have done it earlier.
Yes.
Perhaps I'm being unconscious here of some kind. We're grateful, more than grateful to you. But only we could make the younger people learn this. Well, they're the ones who've got to carry on.
Yes.
So many people that are attracted to this truth and are inquiring into this subject are so near coming themselves. It's the young people that we try and educate and encourage, and I'm sure you do try to do that, but it must be very difficult because there are so many distractions in this modern age of yours, and very few people's minds are turned to the things of life eternal. Still, I suppose we must be patient. What a dreadful word that is, patience. Everyone is being told, I should imagine, to be patient. Patient about this or patient about that. But as I see your world today, I'm afraid it must be very difficult to be patient. The whole atmosphere of your world is so appalling. The conditions are so dreadful. So much has changed since my day. There is no quietude and no peace. All the time man lives in fear, thought about, of course, by his own foolishness. One would have thought that man by this time would have realized the futility of preparation for war. That is not the way to avoid war.
Can you tell us something about what happens on the other side of the city? That side, if people ask me about the other side of life, what happens to these people who make bombs and perhaps destroy and destruct it? Do you feel that you have some idea of their life there? So we can play the tape to them and give us some idea of that side of life?
Well, I suppose that the question can be answered in a sense, in one sentence. As a man sows, so shall he reap. And if a man in your world, by his very nature and the condition of his life, creates a condition of havoc and unhappiness, if he is by nature only concerned with material things, then obviously when he comes here, he will find himself on a plane which is in some respects very similar to us. He will, as it were, be living again a very material conception of life and life. Because after all, the man has not changed. Death doesn't necessarily change a person immediately. A person is still in outlook very much the same. And until such time as man himself begins to realize that he is living in a condition of life that he himself has built, then until he changes his outlook and his attitude, until he begins to search with himself to discover the faults therein, begin to rectify them, he will be living in a condition very similar in many respects to the act. You'll be living in a material mental state, because after all, that is exactly what happens to individuals when they leave your world. They live in a condition of life created by that state of mind. Of course, there are exceptions, as there must well be, but the average person who has lived a reasonably good life will find himself in an atmosphere which is congenial and pleasant. He will find that he will have every opportunity to experience many things that perhaps were denied him on earth. For instance, you may have someone who, by the very circumstances of their earthly life, were unfortunately made to live a very humdrum, unhappy, dreary existence. Well, that person, because they themselves have by their very nature endeavored to be helpful and kind and considerate to others, who sacrifice perhaps themselves to others, will find a very happy form or condition of existence, and the opportunities that were denied them on earth, those opportunities will be presented here. For instance, you may have someone who would have liked to be a musician or an artist in some way, somebody who perhaps would have loved to have had a beautiful garden, but were not able to through circumstances beyond their control, will find that they have a house with a very beautiful garden, or if they wanted to become a musician, over here they can so be a musician. In other words, it's a natural law. And everything here is run, and if I can use the term organized, although there is in a sense no organization here, there is a feeling that everything is in its place, but there is no conscious organization. And you will find that here you have the opportunity to settle and to be happy. But of course, no matter what condition you may find yourself in, there will always be the realization of greater possibilities and greater things that lie ahead, because nothing is static here. Everything has the opportunity for change, and if and when a person begins to seek and begins to change in themselves, begins to desire things in a better order, so automatically, gradually, they will find those conditions. It's all a state of being, a state of mind. Every existence in which one may find themselves is a state of mind. It's a state of awareness, of consciousness. And one contributes towards this, and therefore you find yourself, the average person, that is, in a congenial atmosphere for which you yourself are best suited. The average person certainly finds coming here a happy state of being and great opportunity for knowledge, experience, and rest if it's necessary. There's no depression. The only depression, of course, that one would find is if a person coming here has a great deal that they have cause to regret in their makeup and in their life, and in consequence, people do go through a state of readjustment where they themselves assess themselves for the first time probably, and they begin to feel that they could have done so differently than on earth, and they could have helped so much more than they did. The very self-centered people find things very difficult at first. But of course we must remember and realize that everyone finds eventually that state of existence of which one could call happiness. It's something which is never denied, but everyone must earn it. And so everyone goes through changes and stages of evolution until such time as they have reached a certain goal, if you like, and probably for a very long time they will stay in that environment until they feel the need or the urge to go further. Of course, in a sense, we are not conscious of time, but nevertheless, I suppose to make you understand, we must refer to time so that you can have a vague idea. Although, of course, there are many people who are unfound, who have never, as it were, really left the earth, who are very much on an earthly consciousness, an earthly state of consciousness, an earthly plane. And they are often the people, of course, who do many things which cause some concern to people on your side who are aware of poltergeist, who are aware of interference, and of course, you do get these souls who are so materialistically minded and who do receive a great deal of pleasure in influencing people on your side, especially people of weak mind, or people who themselves open up, as it were, their consciousness to these influences. I don't think enough is understood about the earth souls. I refer to them as earth souls in as much as although they pass from your world, they're still very much part of it. And these earth-bound creatures are not necessarily evil, there are a few, there are some, of course, but are in themselves not doing anything that is working out their own salvation. In fact, they are receiving a great deal of pleasure by utilizing people on your side. I'm quite sure that many of the people in mental hospitals in your world are under the influence of earthbound spirits. And I think it is a great tragedy that this subject, this whole subject, is not better understood among those in the medical profession. Because a lot of these cases are definitely obsessional. And there's a great field for research, a great field there for discovery, a great opportunity for people to work in that particular field where people are suffering from mental disorders. Because a lot of these so-called disorders are not illnesses in the sense that you understand the term. They are definitely cases of obsession. And we on this side have many fellows who work in groups and bands who do endeavor to help and to relieve and to take away, where possible, these influences. But you must remember that they are so close to us, they're so much of the earth, that sometimes it's very difficult to do very much about it. I know this is in a sense, a tragic thing, but at the same time, you must remember that although there is, in a sense, no law, or laws, in the sense that you would realize it, there is, what I'm trying to say is that there are no actual leaders as such. We have an organization which is so subtle and yet so natural, because a person here, for instance, does not, in a sense, give orders. We have groups of souls who do special work, but we all realize automatically within ourselves what our part is, what work we have to do, and we realize that we are all interwoven one with another. I think it is that we are all very conscious of this oneness of spirit. Here no one glories in being a leader, whereas in, for instance, in your world, in religious organizations, in political organizations, you do get this sort of glorification of the individual. The first thing a person must learn, almost, you might say, if they wish to progress here, is to lose that idea of self-importance. Those who have really progressed on this side never, never give that impression, because it's not even in their nature to appear or want to appear important. Everything that we talk about, everything that we do, is done in a complete love, in a complete harmony, one with another. No one wants to override another person. All our influence is for good and in love. And therefore, we don't have, on this side, organization as such. We do not recognize leaders in the sense that you do. And of course, I think anyone with any scrap of intelligence who really speaks into the truth of the Bible, and these truths are staring one fully in the face, and yet so many people cannot see them. For instance, Christ himself had no intention, no desire to found any religious organization. This is completely and absolutely a man-made thing, which over the centuries has misled mankind, and indeed I think it's pretty obvious that if you analyze the whole of my teaching, you will find that he was the most humble of souls, that he had no desire to form any kind of an organization. He chose his disciples among the most ordinary of men. He did not try to dictate. He did not suggest, in the sense that some people seem to assume that he suggested, that they should do this or do that. He gave them completely and absolutely free will to choose the path that they should follow. I think that people would only recognize Christ, only realize what Christ really was, when they begin to discard a lot of outworn creeds and dogmas tacked down over the centuries by men who desired power and position. I would say to you, above all things, if you want to discover truth, avoid men of power and position, because they have only power and position because of their material conception of things. You cannot, surely, build a truly spiritual realization of God on something which is of a material conception. God is not present, in a sense, in buildings or places. God is found within one's soul, within one's inner consciousness. One is confined, surely, God, in all that is of nature. I don't think that any human being who truly seeks God will find God in something which in itself is obviously man-constructed. So man invariably, in his foolishness and his ignorance, considers that he must build edifice to house something which is so much of a spirit. You cannot hold or contain the spirit in a casket. It's something that is as free as the air you breathe, that you must yourselves become conscious and aware of, and you will find that souls from this side, those who truly progress, have broken all the bonds and the shackles and the chains that have bound them through centuries of wrong thinking. Christ realized that the power of the Spirit was within all men. He realized that there was within all humanity that oneness, that tremendous power which could overcome all things. Christ was not concerned with material possessions. He wasn't concerned with material churches or temples as such. Did Christ himself not turn the money changers out of the temple? Did he not see in his own time the hypocrisy of the leaders of his day in the church? And so it is that the hypocrisy and the falsity that has been built up around the simple and wonderful truths that Christ taught, and all the great seers, the great teachers, and the great prophets, we must try to remember and to realize that if we are to find that truth that all men truly seek from within themselves, it can only come when they begin to search truthfully and well within, and endeavor to put, as it were, the house of God in order. For there is a house of God, but it is not a building. It is the temple of the soul. And we must remember that we are not talking individually. We are talking in a collective sense. Because truly the Spirit of God is within all men. It is a force and a power that nothing can distort. One may lose the body, but one gains the soul. And as one gains experience and knowledge, one realizes the tremendous power of spirit that overcomes all things. Man will only find truth when he takes away from himself the shackles that have bound him for centuries. God is found truly among those who are wise in that simplicity. And it is in simplicity that we find truth. Not among those in high places, who through books and learning and through other methods have assumed that they are spiritually wise. Spiritual wisdom comes truthfully and surely from those who have sought within themselves, have found the germ of truth, have found the realization of it, and they have given themselves completely and in love and in service. And as you serve others, you become more aware of God's wisdom and God's truth. The power of the Spirit that is all around and about you is all the time endeavoring to bring through. Those of you who have seen and have known this are endeavoring in your own fashion and your own way to open the consciousness of others that they may too find. We know the difficulties. We know the opposition that you must eventually come up against. Even more so as you progress, the more anxious you are to knock down the adversaries, the more difficult it will be to find the ammunition. But we shall give you the power. We shall give you the love. But you must remember that there will be difficulties beyond sometimes your comprehension. It is a great task that you've been set, and I know that you've achieved a great deal, but there is much yet to be done. And we need many, many, many people. We need innumerable souls, and we do seek the young, because they are the ones who must follow us. They are the ones who must carry forth this flag that we have set. We need the young people. Pray as we can, do as we can to encourage them.
Mrs. Brown, may I just recap on what you said at the beginning about when you pass over the state of mind, actually, or faith?
In majority of cases.
Yes, now, what happens when people like royalty pass over? Now, they're people who are used to comfort everything in life. They have no worries of finance or anything like that. Everything's done for them. They don't know what it is to be poor or hungry. And what happens to those people?
Well, I think the whole story there surely is not whether a person has had all that the world can offer, that is, in a material sense. A person may, for instance, have nothing and be an extremely good person, or a person indeed may have everything the world offers and also be a very good person. I think the whole thing surely depends on whether that person in that position has truly and conscientiously served to the best of their ability and the calling that they have been given. I don't think in a sense it matters one iota whether they've lived in a palace or in a cottage. They will find when they come here that they will be given a condition of life which will be most suited to them. It doesn't necessarily have to be a palace, because surely there must be many people who have lived in palaces and still live in palaces, who, if the truth were known, are glad to relax in just perhaps just one or two rooms. They don't particularly want the pomp and the ceremony. It's part of their heritage, it's part of their background, and they've had to accept it through birth. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're particularly fond of it. It may well be that they've accepted it because it is something they have to accept. But at heart, they may be fundamentally very good, very sincere, and very humble people. You see, we must not, quote, obviously, generalize. If you are thinking, because the person has been used to Paris, that naturally they would expect or assume, that is, if they think at all about life after death, that they should have a palace, I don't think it even matters, because I'm quite sure there are plenty of people who live, shall we say, in a cottage, who, when they come here, would like to live in a palace and probably deserve one. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of people who live in palaces, when they come here, would also like to live in a cottage. I think we must not take this too much on a purely, in a sense, material basis, from the point of view that the reflection of the earth life would be the same here. What I'm trying to convey is not what one may be accustomed to in condition of life, but what one has created by the very nature of one's existence for oneself, which automatically you will enter into. Because you yourself, by your very nature, created a certain set of circumstances that bring about a certain condition of life here, it will be automatic and therefore satisfactory. I know I have met certain so-called kings and queens. Here, of course, we have the kings and queens, and one of the, I should imagine, possibly in certain cases, and certainly is so, that with people of high order, materially that is, who've been used to so much deference, and who've been given everything that the earth seems to offer, there are certainly cases of individuals here who do fight, and have fight, who get difficult to shake off that sort of atmosphere and attitude of mind. But of course, that is something that they have to learn. I mean, it depends, as all these things must do, we cannot generalize. That's why it's also difficult sometimes to give a direct answer to a direct question, because in so many cases, one can so easily generalize, and you can't really generalize, because what may affect one person may not be the same for another, even though on the surface their conditions upon earth seem very similar. That is, of course, another of the great truths, another of the great wonderful realities of life here, that although fundamentally you might say all humanity is the same, what is so wonderful, even in regard to souls here, is that they still retain that individuality. And I suppose if it were not so, we would never recognize each other. And that, of course, would be a very tragic and very unhappy state of affairs for people who are very close to others. I mean, for instance, when a person first comes here, they are, as I've already said, very much the same. And, of course, when their relations join them, they are very much the same. And also, of course, we must remember that the spiritual body is a counterpart, an exact counterpart of the physical body. And that is, if the physical body itself is in a perfect condition, a perfect state. If the physical body has degenerated with age or through illness, or something has happened to it by accident, it is only the physical body that has those marring conditions. The spiritual body will be a reproduction of the perfect state. And so therefore, no one needs to fear that they will not recognize the loved one. So that person, even by the very state of their mind, can so create, as it were, a spiritual counterpart, or shall we say, a reproduction of the physical body for recognition, even though they may not be identically like that in their own spirit life here. You must remember that all life here is a state of mind, from the point of view of that the only things that are created are thoughts. Your world is completely and absolutely, apart from nature, that is, a false world. A man is no more than he thinks. All that you have around and about you that has been created by generations of men is fundamentally being brought about by the power of thought. And of course, we are the same. We bring with us our personality, our character, and our thought ability. We create our life by our power of thought. And so no one need worry that when a person passes that they will be so changed beyond all recognition. The only change is something which we bring about by our change of outlook and development. It's a gradual process, and so gradual that I don't think any generation need fear not recognizing a previous generation, because time itself is of no importance. It takes generations and generations of time for people to progress to the extent that they would become unrecognizable. This is a tremendously difficult subject of time to clarify, because there's so much that we would like to give you, where words in themselves are inadequate and cannot be better described. Therefore, we can only, as I'm sure others have told you, bring things to a certain level so that you can grasp it. But I feel sure that each and every one who speaks from your side that truth as well as spirit can give, will find according to their statute, according to their sincerity of purpose. But when man can release himself from all these bonds which have chained him down, which have closed his mind for generations, when man can free himself from the ties that have bound him to creed and dogma, that have held him back from progressing, from searching, from seeking, when man is truly free, spiritually free, then he will discover, then he will open up tremendous avenues of spiritual progression. I feel that you too are doing a great work. You may be at times inhibited. There may be times when you feel you're being held back, but do not feel for one moment that you are a day. You are always being guided, you are always being helped, and there are innumerable souls that are working with you.
Can I ask you a question?
Please, Harry, dear.
This is what it's really been that you say, is it? You seem so willing, little children, with no chance in life at all, living in underground sort of places, basement places, and you see that the wealth of the world is so much wealth, and yet they seem to have no hope whatever, besides, and now the atmosphere they live in, they become criminals, basically.
Well, that's when you become, as you could say, a criminal whose circumstances beyond their control is not in a sense altogether responsible. And although there is no judgment here in the sense of the old biblical understanding of the meaning of the term, automatically there is that reassessment, and there is that sort of realization that one has within oneself of one's faults and mistakes. And the whole point is that if a person has become, I won't use the term evil, because I don't recognize the term, you see. If a person has become, through circumstances beyond their control, not, one might say, spiritually inclined, or perhaps one has made great mistakes or done things which one may regret, they're not altogether blamed. I think, as I say, it's all a matter of individual cases, where some people can be blamed, others cannot be blamed. You cannot blame a child who, through circumstances beyond its control, has become bad-mannered or ill-mannered, who does things that are not accepted and are not the correct thing to do. I mean, we must always remember that people are, to a great extent, the product of their environment. And if that environment is such as being created because of the selfishness of a few, and then you can hardly blame the individual. But of course, there are many, many things which take time to be brought into the organization of change. We understand fully. Don't think for one moment that any soul that comes here is in any way judged. A person is responsible for themselves and their actions, but every conceivable avenue is taken into consideration in regard to an individual. But there again, it is not others that do the judging. It's oneself. And if a person knows when they come here that they've done many things that were wrong, but they realize it was due to environment and conditions, of which, to a great extent, of yonder control, there are those redeeming features. And, of course, all that is considered. I don't think that there is one solitary thing that one can mention in regard to life here that is not just. Everything is just, because everything here falls into a condition of natural law and order. Every individual sorts himself out. Not others do it for you. You are perhaps helped, or you are often shown the path or the way and advised. But no one can be forced to do anything. No one can be made to change. Person changes suddenly, gradually. They don't suddenly become people of great wisdom, people of great spiritual attainment. Everyone gradually advances. And the worse criminal gradually evolves into a better person, a more advanced person. It may take eons of time, but time is infinitesimal for us, because we are in eternity, and there is, in a sense, no time in eternity. There can be a kind of consciousness of time, and on the lower sphere there is this consciousness of time, but it's purely a reflection of the material. I wish one could explain this more fully, but it is impossible. It's as if there is no perspective, in a sense. For instance, in your world you can see so far, and you can see no further, and yet, as you travel forward, you are approaching that which was before out of sight. So it is with us. We have perspective, we can see so far, and as we're traveling forward, other aspects of perspective come into view, other parts of existence and life that we did not know existed gradually become within our conscious range. You must look upon eternity and eternal life like that, a gradual process of going marching forward, and as one is going forward, new vistas strike the horizon, and as you approach them they become more clear, and you see a different picture and a different scene. That is why different souls and different spheres must surely depict life rather differently one to another. It all depends on the individual, how far they have progressed and what their experiences are. I think this is, of course, the most wonderful thing, that we can, for a few brief moments of your earthly time, link with you and talk with you, discuss with you, and as far as it is in our power, help and guide you. And that you are doing this work to help others surely is the greatest thing of all. Go forward, my friends, in strength, and know that you are indeed well blessed, highly blessed, and many are they who help you. Now I must go, and I leave you with all my best.
Could you tell me, if we have the book printed, published, that is, of the people that have come through to us, that we hope will do some good to humanity, do you think it will be published? We send it to the publishers.
I'm sure it will, and it will receive great blessing, and be a great source of encouragement to many, and give them an insight into that glorious truth that you have also beheld. I must go. Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.